Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 30 to close at 20,547. S&P 500 down 7 at 2,348. NASDAQ Composite down 6 at 5,910. Russell 2000 small and mid caps down 4 at 1379. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 1 basis point at 2.24%. Oil down $1.17 at $49.54 per barrel. Gold up $2.20 at $1,284.90 per ounce. For the week, the Dow Industrials were down 3 days and up 2, but the two gainers were pretty big. The S&P 500 managed to notch its first weekly gain in 3 weeks. For the week, the Dow up 0.5%. The S&P 500 up 0.8%. The NASDAQ advanced 1.8%, notching a record high along the way. Small caps in the Russell 2000 provided outsized gains of 2.6% on the week. Oil prices dropped more than 2% today, notching the biggest weekly decline in more than a month, mounting evidence that U.S. production and inventory growth were offsetting OPEC's attempts to reduce the global crude glut. West Texas Intermediate crude lost 6.7% for the week. The U.S. Commodities Future Trading Commission showed total long positions in U.S. crude rose in the week to April 18th to their highest in more than a month, more than 355,000 contracts. But oil has sagged in recent days, much as it did in March. Many in the market still expect OPEC to renew its production cuts for another 6 months. Still, shipment data shows more oil transiting world oceans than when the cuts were first put in place. According to AAA, 43 states have seen prices at the pump increase over the past week. The national average is $2.42 a gallon. That reflects an increase of 13 cents in the last month, 30 cents, around 14% compared to last year. A bump in gas prices is actually typical around this time of year, as oil refineries switch over from their winter blend to the summer blend. The U.S. currently has an oversupply of gas, and as the weather warms up, demand will likely rise in June, sapping up supply and pushing prices up. AAA expects the national average for gas to peak around $2.70 a gallon in June. In 2016, summer gas prices peaked at around $2.38 a gallon. A handful of states will even see gas prices over $3 a gallon this summer, especially on the West Coast. In fact, we're already seeing it. Hawaii at $3.06, California $3.01 per gallon. Cheapest gas in the nation, South Carolina at $2.13 per gallon. Of the 95 companies in the S&P 500 that have reported earnings through this morning, about 75% topped expectations, that according to the latest Thomson Reuters data, above the 71% average for the past 4 quarters. Overall, profits of S&P 500 companies are now estimated to have risen 11.2% in the quarter, which would be the most since 2011. Markets were hesitant today in advance of Sunday's French elections. This is just the first round of the elections, winnowing a field of 11 candidates down to 2 who will face off in 3 weeks. Still, a lot is at stake, and we'll dive into those details in just a bit. President Trump told the Associated Press today that he will unveil a tax reform package next week, promised a massive tax cut for individuals and businesses. He said it would be released Wednesday or shortly thereafter, but declined to give details. He said the cuts will be bigger, I believe, than any tax cut ever. The Tax Policy Center in Washington says the plan would cut taxes at every income level, but high-income taxpayers would receive the biggest cuts both in dollar terms and as a percentage of income. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin reiterated the administration is planning to unveil its tax reform plan in the near future. He said the administration is very close to releasing a proposal. Mnuchin said corporate inversions will be part of an overall review of tax regulations. Inversions involve U.S. firms that move their legal address abroad to cut their tax bills through mergers with foreign companies. President Trump's budget director, Mick Mulvaney, said the administration plans to include $200 billion for new infrastructure spending in its full fiscal year 2018 budget. In a moderated discussion at the Institute of International Finance Conference, Mulvaney said this is all the money needed to fund $1 trillion in projects if leveraged properly. Mulvaney said there will not be any specific votes on infrastructure spending until the fall. Meanwhile, the White House has ordered federal agencies to begin preparations for a potential partial government shutdown. It shouldn't come to that, but they need to be prepared. The White House says it wants to see money for Trump's border wall included in the spending bill Congress must pass next week. Democrats are opposed to the wall, consider including it in the budget bill to be something of a poison pill. Senate needs 60 votes to pass the budget. Look for a possible short-term extension while they work it out. The push to reach an agreement on spending is complicated by White House efforts to try again for a House vote on replacing Obamacare next week. If ongoing congressional budget battles do force a government shutdown next week, home buyers and sellers could be subject to more headaches than usual before their deals close. That's because buyers looking for mortgage approval could hit paperwork roadblocks if the shutdown furloughs workers at the IRS or Social Security Administration. And that's what happened in October 2013, the last time budget gridlock forced a 16-day shutdown that sent millions of government workers on furlough and gummed up the works in the housing market. National Association of Realtors says existing home sales ran at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 5.71 million, a 4.4% monthly increase, strongest selling pace since February of 2007, and 5.9% higher than a year ago. Total inventory is still the biggest factor in the marketplace. Supply was 6.6% lower compared to a year ago, and that nudged the national median sales price to $236,400, a 6.8% gain compared to a year ago. March's price increase marks the 61st consecutive month of year-over-year gains. Unemployment rates were lower in March in 17 states and stable in 33 states. Colorado had the lowest unemployment rate in March, 2.6%. New Mexico came in at 6.7%, the highest state unemployment rate. Arizona's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate decreased from 5.1% in February to 5% in March. The U.S. seasonally adjusted unemployment rate decreased from 4.7% in February to 4.5% in March. A year ago, the Arizona seasonally adjusted rate was 5.4% and the U.S. rate was at 5%. Private sector gained 11,200 jobs. Government cut 2,400 jobs, so the net gain for Arizona, 8,800 jobs. The sector with the strongest growth was leisure and hospitality. Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer isn't worried about the economy. In an interview today, Fischer said weak growth in the U.S. economy in the first quarter will likely be temporary, and interest rate hikes should be able to proceed as planned. The Fed has penciled in two more rate hikes this year, and Fischer said this remains his forecast, depending on data, of course. In the past few years, the economy has shown weakness in the first quarter, followed by stronger growth in the second and third quarters. First quarter growth probably running at about a 1% rate. The government will release an advance estimate of first quarter GDP April 28th. Economists expect a rebound to a 2.7% rate in the second quarter. The United States will not make an exception for American companies, including ExxonMobil, seeking to drill in areas prohibited by U.S. sanctions on Russia. The U.S. and European Union imposed economic sanctions on Russia over its annexation of the Crimea region in 2014 and its role in the conflict in eastern Ukraine. The sanctions forced Exxon to wind down drilling in Russia's Arctic in 2014. Exxon had asked for and received in 2015 and 2016 waivers to operate a joint venture with Russian oil producer Rosneft in Russia. European Union sanctions do not keep European oil companies from operating in Russia. That was a point of annoyance for Exxon. In recent months, Exxon applied for a Treasury Department waiver to drill with Rosneft, and today the waiver request was denied. A federal judge in Detroit has sentenced Volkswagen to 3 years probation for the German automaker's diesel emissions scandal. It's all part of a $4.3 billion settlement announced in January. The plea agreement called for organization probation, in which the company would be overseen by an independent monitor. General Electric reported quarterly sales and adjusted earnings results that beat analyst estimates, but shares fell on concerns about some of its industrial businesses and its $1.6 billion in negative cash outflow. Adjusted earnings, 21 cents per share, unchanged from a year ago. That beat analyst estimates of 17 cents. Revenue fell 1% to $27.66 billion. GE shares down 2.4% today. Subway restaurants closed 359 U.S. locations in 2016. It's the first time Subway had a net reduction. Store count dropped 1.3% to 26,744. But Subway remains the nation's most ubiquitous eatery. Subway is coping with subpar sales in the U.S., made worse by the emergence of newer fast casual rivals and the industry's heavy reliance on discounts and promotions. Subway also has lost some of its luster as a healthier food option. Sales fell 1.7% last year to about $11.3 billion. Subway still growing internationally, though. Sales outside the U.S. up 3.7% last year. Dow Jones Industrial Average today down 30 at 20,547. S&P 500 down 7 at 2348. And the NASDAQ down 6 to finish the week at 5910. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com. Thanks so much for joining us today for the Financial Review. This Sunday, April 23rd, is Election Day in France, and so we'll take a little time now to present a primer on the French elections. The four top candidates in a field of 11 are in a virtual dead heat. The differences between their scores is within the acknowledged margins of error by the pollsters. The top two finishers will face off against each other in a runoff on May 7th. Now, the top four candidates, and forgive my pronunciation, the top four are François Fillon, Marine Le Pen, Emmanuel Macron, and Jean-Luc Mélenchon. At stake in the election is the future of both France and perhaps even the European Union. Two candidates are pro-Eurozone and considered market-friendly, former investment banker Emmanuel Macron and former Prime Minister François Fillon. And two are decidedly not. In the not category, you have Marine Le Pen of the far-right National Front and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, a socialist. Whoever wins will have the power to push France in a drastic new political direction and could radically alter the nation's relationship with the EU. They will also have to address a number of pressing social and political issues that have plagued France in recent years. The country is suffering from high youth unemployment and a flagging economy, as well as dealing with questions over national identity and immigration. It's also been in a state of emergency since the 2015 terror attacks that killed 130 people in Paris and suffered numerous incidents of terrorism since then, including an attack yesterday that killed a police officer in France and wounded two others. Fillon, Le Pen, Macron, and Mélenchon, they run the political spectrum from far left to far right. And while these are the front runners, anything could happen. Almost one-third of French voters are still undecided. Almost a third have said they'll sit out the voting on Sunday. So there is great uncertainty. Only a few months ago, the outcome of France's election was viewed as relatively certain. Unpopular President François Hollande declared in December that he would not seek a second term, and it was widely expected that the winner of the Conservative Republican Party's primary would have a clear path to the presidency. François Fillon won the leadership race, but his campaign became quickly mired in scandal after allegations surfaced earlier this year that he paid his family members hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars for jobs they never worked. The corruption claims have dogged Fillon's run, and he is now under formal investigation for misuse of public funds. Unless Fillon manages a comeback, France will have its first president ever to come from a non-establishment party. As Fillon's campaign struggled and with Hollande's socialist party in shambles, the field opened for the rise of centrist independent candidate Emmanuel Macron. Now the front runner, the former banker, drew huge crowds to rallies as he campaigned on a platform aimed at strengthening the Euro Union and reforming the economy. Along with Macron, Jean-Luc Mélenchon has seen a rapid rise in polls in recent months. Mélenchon's rallying cry is a France that won't bow down. Mélenchon, who compares himself to U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, has vowed a 90% tax on people earning more than $425,000 a year, and he wants to implement a 32-hour work week. Finally, there is far-right National Front leader Marine Le Pen, who is in a tight race with Macron for winning the first round of voting. Le Pen has run on a populist platform that includes drastic cuts to immigration, leaving the EU, and opposing Islam's place in French society. Both Le Pen and Mélenchon are campaigning for a withdrawal from the European Union and a shift away from the international institutions that make up the bedrock of modern Europe. A French exit from the Euro Union could very well be the beginning of the end of the trading bloc. France is a key player in the EU, as well as one of its largest economies. And its departure would come on the heels of Brexit, already a traumatic event for the Union. And while the French election deals with immigration, left versus right, rural versus urban, globalization, and the fate of the EU, the core issue is probably jobs. Emmanuel Macron, the centrist ex-banker, says he's the jobs candidate. However, he earned the ire of the unions by saying an Uber driver working 70 hours a week had more dignity than a man without work. Meanwhile, Marine Le Pen, the far-right populist, thinks the way to provide jobs is to get rid of the immigrants. François Fillon, the pro-business, anti-gay marriage Russophile, also says he's the jobs candidate. And so does Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the surging communist who wants to cap all incomes at around 400,000 euros. In their own ways, they all want to put more French to work. That's the economy. So far, financial markets have been reticent to place big bets on the election. There has been a move to safe havens, such as the German Bund, where the yield on 10-year bonds has dropped below 0.2%. The Swiss government bond market has remained mostly in negative yield territory. Probably not a coincidence that the yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note dropped down to a low of 2.2% this week. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar has been in a downtrend since mid-January. And while the Japanese yen has been trending higher year-to-date, this is generally considered a risk-off trade. And that might be the best bet. Risk-off, wait for the votes to be tallied and the dust to settle, and greater clarity for the May runoff.